Welcome to the last session. I'm glad you came here. My name is Scott Allen. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about link beyond queries. And so link is, itself is a confusing term because link, people apply it to a lot of different things in C#. I mean, ostensibly, it's language integrated query. So it's all about writing C# code to be able to query objects in memory or query a database or query a web service, query what have you. What I want to describe are some of the features of C# 3.0 that were added into the language to facilitate link, and we call them link features, things like the lambda expressions and the expression trees that, again, ostensibly they're about being able to query things, but I found some different uses for them that I thought you might find interesting. You see, a couple years ago I was faced with a project that was quite interesting. It was a project that was a software project that what the company wanted to do was measure the quality of a hospital. And I thought this was going to be very easy because it turns out there's already a nonprofit organization in the States that has devoted millions of dollars in research with doctors and clinicians and healthcare providers in general to define how to measure the quality of a hospital. And they have taken all their research and they have distilled it into flowcharts. So it's like the perfect dream for someone who does waterfall development, right? Everything is specified up front for you. But when I sat down with these, I realized that each quality measure was not just a flowchart on one page. Sometimes it was 2 pages, sometimes it was 3 pages, sometimes it was 6 pages, sometimes it was 12 pages. And there's not just one set of flowcharts. There was like 12 sets of flowcharts. We're talking like 75 to 100 pages of flowchart stuff. And we had to get all this encoded into the software so that we could run it against the data inside of a hospital and, say, and tell them, yes, you're doing a good job, or no, this is where you need to improve. And the challenge was is that we wanted to stay as close to the flowchart as possible because the other catch was these things get tweaked every 3 to 6 months. Based on the feedback from the doctors and the clinicians and the hospitals, they want to change the flowchart around. So we needed the ability to code these things up quickly and also be able to hire someone who knew C# code and give them the PDF with the flowchart and give them the source code and say, now, you need to reconcile some differences. And I evaluated a couple different technologies before this all went down. I started with, let's try the simplest possible thing that could work, right? That's the rule. So I started with if-else statements, and that lasted for about 5 minutes, and I said, this isn't going to work. I tried Windows Workflow, I tried a couple rules engines, but what I ultimately came back to was just C# code, but with some of these C# 3.0 features. So the first part of this presentation, what I want to do is just describe these things that were added into C# that are generally useful. So the story goes that many years ago, someone walked up to a whiteboard at Microsoft and said, here's what we would like to do in C#. We'd like to walk up to some sequence of objects, where sequence isn't this magic type that we have yet, but it hides the source of the data. So we might have a sequence of objects coming out of a database, we might have a sequence of objects coming out of a web service, we might have a sequence of objects that are already in memory, but we want to give developers the ability to express how they want to filter that data, sort that data, project it, transform it, join it, group it, and so forth. And we want to do that in an eloquent way so that you can look at the code and see the intent. I can look at that code and say, oh, you want the employees, just the ones named Scott. The closest you could get to that in C# 2.0 might be something like this. You have IEnumerable of employee. IEnumerable is a wonderful interface because it hides where the data is really coming from. I can have data in a database or in memory or behind a web service and hide the source of the data just by putting it behind an interface and have different concrete implementations of where that is. But the ability to do things like filter, like how do I express what I want to filter? Well, presumably there'll be a where method somewhere that knows how to do the filtering, so it knows how to iterate through things and pull the ones out that you want, but it doesn't know what you want to filter, and I need to express that somehow. In this case, the closest I could get to that in C# 2.0 would be to write essentially an anonymous method, but anonymous methods in C# 2.0 required a lot of noise, delegate keywords and type names and return keywords and curly braces. So all sorts of syntax problems. How many of you have heard the saying about ceremony versus essence in programming languages? I know Neil Ford has talked about this quite a bit. How much time do you spend when you're writing a piece of software doing ceremonial stuff that makes the C# compiler happy, like the return keyword, these type names, these delegate keywords? That's all ceremony. The essence of this, which is what I want to get done, is I just want to filter out things that have a name equal to Scott. But I have to surround it with all this other cruft, right? It's just like wedding ceremonies are full of a lot of ceremony. There's really only 20 seconds that matter, and that's when the preacher says, you are now pronounced man and wife. So it'd be great if we could just get wedding ceremonies over in 20 seconds without all the stuff around it, right? At least that's what we want to do in programming languages. Wedding ceremonies are a little bit different. There's a lot of emotions involved. So how do we go from something like this that's all ceremony to something like this that is all essence? The first question to solve was, how do we hide the data? What sort of type are we going to use to expose the data? Again, because IEnumerable is a beautiful interface. Let's look at IEnumerable once. If I bring that up with F12, look at it in the object browser, there's just one method there called getEnumerator, and that gives you something back that lets you walk through each object. You can just call getNext, right? Give me the next one, give me the next one, give me the next one. And we can write something behind IEnumerator, IEnumerable, that is pulling things out of a database or across a network. But we want to do more with link than just get the next object. We want to be able to filter, project, partition, sort. So what could we do to, where could we add that functionality, like a where method, a select method, a join method, a group by method? What would be the problem with adding that to IEnumerable of T and just filling it up with methods? Right, whoever implements IEnumerable now has to implement all of those link operators, even if they don't care about them. And what's even worse is maybe Microsoft could take that approach, add 50 methods to IEnumerable, and someone goes out and implements all of them. And then when .NET 4.0 comes out, they want to add one or two more methods, and it breaks everyone who has that interface, right? So the first issue to address was, how can we add methods to an interface like IEnumerable without really putting them in the contract of IEnumerable itself, without forcing people to implement them? And the answer to that question was with extension methods. Extension methods essentially add, make it appear, gives the illusion that there's a method on a type that's not really there. And let's skip the code on this slide. We'll actually look at it in Visual Studio. You have probably used a class like this before, right? A static class, string utilities that's full of a bunch of stuff, because you parse a lot of doubles, let's say. And then when you're inside of here and you have some string, price, so you get that over the web in an HTTP request, 2.13. Then let's call that value, and let's say that the price would be equal to string utils dot parse double that value. That's how we did it in C# 2.0. We had to invoke a method on a static class. And again, that's ceremony, not essence. Extension methods are really cool because all you need to do is add a this keyword in front of that first parameter. And that means that that method will now appear as a method that you can invoke on any string type. So if I come back into Home Controller, what I can now do is I can say double or value, and you can see parse double is down there. I'm going to try to zoom in. This proved dangerous earlier today. I can see some of you were there for that. It appears with a slightly different icon in the list of things that are available for string. It has that little arrow on it. That's just Visual Studio telling you that this isn't a real extension method on string, or a real method, instance method on string. It's an extension method. and I can get rid of that parameter. Essentially, the C# compiler will make sure it invokes that method on static method on the static class and pass in this value as the first parameter. So this is really nice, and one thing that means that you can do then is you can put extension methods on IEnumerable to make it appear as if there are lots of linky type things you can do. So for instance, if you look at an array of numbers, well actually if you just look at this string, since it's a sequence of characters, there are, well let's go back to numbers actually, let's keep it a little more clear. 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, 4. All these things in here, aggregate, average, if we go all the way down, there's a where. These are all the standard built-in link operators. And where do they come from? They come from a static class called enumerable, that if we look up the definition of that, enumerable, there we go. That's all the methods on enumerable. And you can see that they are extension methods for IEnumerable of T, because there's a this in front of the first parameter. If we scroll all the way down, there's the where operator that we like. And we'll talk about what funcs are here in just a bit. What's interesting about extension methods is a couple things you have to know. First of all, they have to be in a non-generic static class to be used. And they're still external static methods. So just because you define an extension method doesn't mean you get access to any private state inside of a string or whatever type that you're extending. You're still an external client for that class. And you cannot hide or override any instance members. So for instance, you'd never get anything out of defining an extension method called toString, because every object already has an instance method called toString. You cannot change what it's doing. But the other neat thing about extension methods is that you have to import the namespace for them to work. So if I take out using system.link up here, comment that out, and I come back down to my numbers that I shouldn't have deleted, but now my numbers are just an array of numbers again. There's nothing really special about them. I can just get enumerator and get type. I lost all the querying ability. One reason this is interesting is because, as I'll show you later, I'm going to be working with a flowchart class that actually mimics a flowchart, the kind that I was working with in the PDFs. And there's a lot of times when I just want to use the flowchart as the flowchart. So let me comment out that namespace. And the only things right now that I can do are tell the flowchart to evaluate and produce some result for me, or tell it to validate itself and make sure that the internal data structure is set up correctly. But that's a different scenario using the flowchart than trying to build a flowchart. So what happens when I want to build a new flowchart and I have to add these things called shapes to it and create new shapes, da-da-da, and new shapes have rules, so I need to create rules. And I'm getting back into that situation where there's a lot of ceremony here because I'm using new keywords and keeping references around and storing things on each line. However, what we'll be looking at later is using extension methods to build the flowchart. So I want a new flowchart, and I want it to have a shape called check the length of something. And that's going to have a rule that'll do something. And just sort of chaining these methods together so that someone can actually sit down with a PDF and look at the source code and say, oh yeah, here's the shape and the rule that it's evaluating, and actually follow it along in the code along with the physical representation of that flowchart. That's what we'll be taking a look at in a little bit. But there's a couple more things we have to look at first. Questions about extension methods, though? Yes, sir.
If you cannot hide your overwrite instance methods, what happens if Microsoft adds an instance method to the class?
Then your extension method. So the question is, what happens if Microsoft adds an instance method to some type that I had already written as an extension method? Then the Microsoft method's going to win. And and there's just not much you can do about it in that scenario. Yeah. That would break the code. The other thing that I always thought would be neat is maybe, you know, maybe Microsoft could make some money if they did something like this. If they wrote an extension method called, let's say, drink Pepsi, and they made that an extension method on object, and they put it in the system namespace, it would be like an advertisement. Because literally everything that you walked up to and tried to invoke an operator on, there'd be, oh, Pepsi, drink Pepsi? I should go out and drink something. But that's just silly. Get rid of that. No one would ever stoop that low, right? So extension methods take care of one of those problems I was telling you about before. How can we add all these link operators to a very nice, vanilla, plain interface like IEnumerable of T without actually forcing people to implement them or breaking them when we introduce new link operators? So it takes care of part of the problem. So for instance, if we wanted to query this list of cities, Boston, Los Angeles, and Seattle, and so forth, then we can walk up and do a cities.where, where is an extension method defined somewhere else. It's not a method on IEnumerable, and now it's available. But we still have a problem here, and the problem is this anonymous method that we use to express how we want to filter something. It has all this cruft in it, a delegate keyword and so forth. That was solved with Lambda expressions. So let's actually look at that code. I'm going to bring numbers back up one more time. And let's say we want to do numbers.where. In the old days, we would have to say, I want to write an anonymous method that takes an integer value. And if I just want, let's say, the odd numbers, I will return value modulo 2 equals 1. And if we do a build, the build succeeds. That's the anonymous method syntax. What Microsoft decided to do to make that sort of expression work better is to introduce this Lambda expression, because they looked at that and they said, a lot of these things we should be able to figure out. If you're invoking a where operator on a sequence of integers, then you shouldn't have to tell us that the parameter being passed in each time is going to be an integer. So let's take out that restriction where you have to provide a type name there. And in fact, this whole delegate keyword, we know it's got to be a delegate. So let's just get rid of that thing, too. Don't have to write a delegate keyword. Oh, I thought my keyboard broke, but fortunately, I just had my hand stuck on a key. These curly braces, why exactly do we have them in there? Not sure. Let's get rid of those, too. We know we have to return some value, so why do we force you to write a return keyword? Not sure, so let's get rid of that too. We've shortened this thing down considerably, but we still need to pay some homage to the C-sharp compiler gods, so we'll introduce a new symbol known as the goes-to operator. And now what I have written there, the Lambda expression, is exactly what I had before with the anonymous method. In fact, when the C-sharp compiler comes along, it compiles that thing down into an anonymous method that would, if you open it up with a tool like Reflector, it would look just like the code I had before. But now it's a lot shorter. And in fact, these parentheses here aren't needed. And a lot of people like to keep their Lambda parameters as a single character. So we'd say something like V goes to V modulo 2 equals 1. I did that for a long time, and I started to find it to get confusing and more complicated expressions. I've sort of gone back to always typing something meaningful for the name of the Lambda parameter. That solved problem number two, which was, how do we express what cities we want without a bunch of noise? So essentially, we shrunk down how to write a delegate using Lambda expressions. Now, Lambda expressions are pretty cool because they're very functional. This is officially known as the goes to operator. I mentioned that before. So this line of code here would read as s goes to s dot starts with L. And you can, if you want, still include curly braces, still include return statements, and still include parameter types. In fact, if you do start using curly braces to define a whole multiple expressions inside of here, a body, you do have to use the return keyword. So you could write a Lambda expression like that. But generally, they're things that you want to keep very short, right? Microsoft then introduced a couple new generic types to make it very easy to pass around Lambda expressions. One of those types is the func type. So a func takes one or more generic parameters. The last generic parameter represents the return type of this function. Any other generic parameters represent the parameters that you want to pass in. So for instance, a function of int and int would be something that takes an integer and returns an integer. So let's call it something that will square a number. And we'll define it as x goes to x times x. So we'll return x squared. Likewise, a func of int and int and int takes two integers, still returns an integer. So we could call that add and say x goes to, or x, sorry, x and y, x and IntelliSense, x and y goes to x plus y. Once you have two parameters here, you have to use the parentheses. There's also a new type called action, which doesn't return a value. So all the generic type parameters you pass in here would be the type of the parameter that you need to pass in. So an action event would take an integer, return void. And it's very easy to use these. So I could do something like result equals square 3 and, oh, sorry, let's do add 3 and the square of 3. And we have to spell that correctly for that to work. And that would be compilable. We could execute that and get a result. We could also pass these things around as parameters. In fact, if you remember when we looked at the enumerable class, at the methods that define like where, the things they were taking in were funcs. So they said, pass me a function, pass me a Lambda expression that describes how you want to filter stuff, right? And let's just step through this code once, and I want to point out a couple things inside of here. First of all, we do get the result that we wanted, which was 12. The other thing I want to point out is that if you try to look at these functions in the debugger, hopefully that's still zoomed in enough so you can see it in the back, they are still opaque code. So when the C# compiler is going along and it sees a Lambda expression, it still generates an anonymous method and compiles it into IL. So it's zeros and ones. We have no idea what's inside of there. We look at it in the debugger, all it can tell us is that it's a method that returns an integer and takes an integer. Doesn't know what's inside. Completely opaque. So think about that for a second, and then think about the capabilities of Link. So if those things are compiled into IL, and we're just querying against a sequence of numbers that are in memory, that's fine. Because I can envision the where operator just taking the function that I pass in and invoking it once for each number in the collection. But what happens when I'm not querying numbers or something that's in memory? What happens if I'm querying SQL Server, or I'm querying OData Data Source, or ADO.NET Data Services, or NHibernate, or Twitter, or LDAP, or any of these remote things that people have written link providers for? How do those providers figure out my essence, what I'm trying to filter? How do they know, in this case, how do they know that I want something that starts with an L? Do they have to decompile the code? Do they have to look in the assembly? No, that would be a little bit expensive. So let me introduce you to one other new type, which is expression of T. And one of the things that you can do with an expression is wrap a function inside the expression. So let's wrap both of these. And that included a new namespace, by the way, which was system.link.expressions. That gives us the expression type. And you'll notice now that I get a compiler error. I can no longer invoke add. I can no longer invoke square. Suddenly, I'm getting a compiler error that tells me I don't have a method here anymore. And let's comment out that line of code and run this in the debugger again. And step over these lines of code and look in the debugger again with the dangerous zooming feature. All right, there's square. And now it's different. Now the debugger actually seems to know something about this. It knows that x goes to x times x. And if I look at it in the with the visualizer that's provided as a Visual Studio sample, and I zoom out, what happened is that this thing seems to be some sort of data structure now. It was no longer compiled to MISL, to IL. And so here's the key. That expression type, expression of T, is in collusion with the C-sharp compiler. They work together. When the C-sharp compiler sees expression of something, it no longer compiles what's inside of that lambda expression into IL and puts it in assembly. Instead, it looks at that lambda expression and it builds an abstract syntax tree that represents the instructions that are inside that lambda expression. And that all happens only because it was expression of T. And so suddenly I have this data structure, an expression of func, of int and int, that I can see that, oh, this is some sort of multiplication operator inside of here. It takes a parameter called x. And if you can see that node type in the middle of the screen, node type is multiply. This is how the remote link providers work. When you're writing these lambda expressions against nHibernate or Link to SQL, you're not writing lambda expressions that get compiled into IL. You're writing lambda expressions that get transformed into these data structures, and then a link provider has to parse those things, which is a non-trivial job because you have to parse those things and figure out how to do a, should I do an order by in transact SQL or a where or a group by and so forth. And it turns out that there's an entirely different set of link operators defined. We looked at the ones on enumerable, right? The ones on enumerable took funcs. There's another type called queryable. And let's look at the where operator on queryable. Right there on the bottom line, that's the where operator for iQueryable. That is no longer taking a func, it's taking a expression of func. So anytime you write a where operator against something that implements iQueryable, you're using that method, and therefore you're not creating compiled code, you're creating one of these syntax trees that'll get parsed at runtime. Did I make that understandable? This is extremely powerful. How many people have ever programmed in Lisp, like in college? Do Lisp in college? At least a few. How many people program in Lisp after college? Oh, still one. All right, awesome. The ability to treat your code as data raises all sorts of interesting possibilities. Now, in C#, we just get a little glimpse of this, but it's still very powerful because all of a sudden, what I'll show you a little bit later is we can use expressions and have the ability to actually inspect the code to see what was the intent inside of there. What property were they looking at? What property were you trying to validate? Because now that I have an expression tree that represents what that property is, I know what the property name is. I could also get the property value if I wanted to. But I could compare that maybe to some UI widgets and see if they're decorated with anything that say that they're associated with that property. I'll show you how that works in a little bit later. So code is data. An expression of funk, of int and int, the square expression. If you looked at that in the debugger, it would look like this. Even if you did a console.WriteLine, it would look like this. Now you can, let's see, you can dot compile these things, which is another neat feature. So given some expression, if I dot compile it, that will actually transform it into executable instructions. Essentially, it takes the expression part off, so I can transform this expression into a func. And that's something I can execute. But the real power of these expression trees is through runtime analysis. And essentially, this line of code, if you open that up with Reflector, you'd see these instructions that the C# compiler generated. Those are the really nasty, grungy, ugly, hard to work with instructions that build these abstract syntax trees. And it's unfortunately a very difficult area to work in, but also powerful. Questions? Yes, sir. Can you build an expression from a string? There's no built-in facilities to like just pass a string literal and say turn this into an expression, but you can certainly you can certainly write code like this to build an expression on the fly at runtime, and it's not fun, but it's possible. Yeah. And I have built a few expressions on the fly, and typically what I do is I go and create a new console mode program, write the expression, open it up with compile it, open it up with Reflector, paste that code as a starting point. Because trying to figure out what some of these types are is difficult, and the MSDN documentation is very obtuse. You know, you look up expression.lambda. Expression.lambda is a lambda expression. You know, the recursive type of definition that drives people crazy. This expression tree viewer, by the way, that I was showing you, that's a helpful tool. That doesn't come in Visual Studio by default, but if you go into the Visual Studio samples, if you go to the help menu and you look at Visual Studio samples, that's one of the samples that ships with Visual Studio. You build it, you copy it into, under My Documents, you copy it under Visualizers, under Visual Studio, and then it'll appear in the debugger if you want to be able to essentially look at these expression trees. Another good project, let's see if I can bring up Notepad. If you're interested in building and parsing and compiling these things, is the iQueryable toolkit on CodePlex. Essentially, my understanding is this. The guy who uploaded that is, if I remember his name correctly, it's Matt Warren. He worked on the Link to SQL team, and essentially took a lot of the code that was in the Link to SQL engine that would parse syntax trees and transform them into transact SQL. He lifted a lot of that code and essentially made it open source here on CodePlex. So you can get some really neat ideas from it. You can also see how non-trivial it is to parse link expressions into transact SQL. It's easy to get started, but to catch all the edge cases requires some devotion. All right. One more feature that I think is interesting in C# 3 that made my job a little easier was the var keyword. And I know most people know about the var keyword. Some people think it's evil. But it's not the JavaScript var keyword, right? It's just implicit typing. If I say var name equals Scott, whoops, that was the wrong button. Name is a string. It's still typed as a string. That would print out as true. This is still going to be a double. This is going to be an integer. And this is going to be a double because it's an int multiplied by double. Therefore, it's a double. And there's things that you cannot do with the var keyword. For instance, you cannot have an uninitialized variable because the C# compiler doesn't know how to type it then. Can't have multiple declarators. You can't assign null. That would be any reference type. And again, this is something you could do in JavaScript that you still can't do in C#. So if I have the string 42, I cannot just try to add 1 to it and expect to get some magical result. JavaScript would do that. All right, so let me show you some things. Put some of this together. And the first thing I want to do is I have a view set up in this MVC project already that will allow me to enter in information about a movie. Very simple information, like the title, the release date, and the length of the movie in minutes. So it's 93 minutes long. And what I want to do is I want to simulate having some complex logic that has to be evaluated behind this form to tell if a movie is going to be good or not. And I'm going to do that using a simple flowchart type that's a generic type where you pass it in T and R. T is going to be the type of input it receives, in this case a movie. I want it to evaluate movies. And R is going to be the type of result it produces. So if I look in my data folder, movies can be, we can have an undetermined result, which essentially means we don't have enough information yet, or it could be a good movie or a bad movie. So there's no in between, right? It's like the George Bush movie rater. You're either with us or against us. So first thing we want to do is build a flowchart. And instead of me typing, let me just go ahead and take some code that I hid down here at the bottom and paste it up here and talk a little bit about what it does. So I'm going to create a new flowchart. That's a shape called check title with an arrow pointing to some other shape, like the next shape, but we're only going to follow that path if this rule evaluates to true. And this is a lambda expression. So the rule is that we have to have a title. Title cannot be null or empty on that movie. Then we'll check the length of the movie. So what we want to do is we want to say it's going to be a bad movie if that movie runs too long. I don't like movies that are over 2 hours long, right? At that point, you just want to get out of the theater and move on to the rest of the evening. And just to show that this can get a little more complicated, I have another arrow inside of the shape that points to good movie, and that's if the length is exactly 75, just some magic number. Otherwise, let's say the movie length is 90 minutes. We don't have enough information yet to tell if it's good or bad, so now let's check the release date on the movie and make sure that someone has at least filled out the length information. So it's a bad movie if it was released before the year 2000. Arbitrary. Otherwise, it's going to be a good movie. And these final two shapes, bad movie, good movie, they actually yield results back. Anything else, when this, I'll show you the code that evaluates this flowchart. If it's evaluating this flowchart and it gets stuck because it cannot move to the next shape, it'll just come back and say, oh, I couldn't determine a result. But if it gets to one of these terminal shapes that yields a result, this will actually say, this was a bad movie, this was a good movie. So now a couple things about this. One thing is people might look at this and say, oh no, you're using these string literals, that's incredibly brittle. In my scenario, it worked out for us because someone literally had to sit down with this code and a PDF of the real flowchart and look at shape names, right? So they would find something called bad movie in the PDF and they'd look over here in the code or search for it and boom, it would be right there. And just to prevent anyone from, let's say, adding two shapes called bad movie or forgetting to add the shape called bad movie when something was pointing to it, you can run unit tests. And the unit tests can do things like, let's check for duplicate names. I'm going to make sure that no shapes have the same name. So I'll go through all the shapes in this flowchart, group them by the name. If any of those groupings come out with a count greater than one, that means someone duplicated the name. So that would be something that you can catch before it gets into a QA system, before it leaves the developer's desk. You can also check for invalid destination. So what this one does is it goes out and says, tell me all the names of all the shapes in this flowchart. That's all I care about. Just give me a list of all the names, bad movie, good movie, check length, and so forth. Now I want to go into all the shapes, and I want to get all of the arrows and find out what they point to. So what does select many do? Select many is a flattening operator. It takes a sequence of sequences and gives you back a sequence. So in other words, if I do a select many on a list of integer arrays, that means I could have a list of three arrays. So this is 1, 2, and 3, 4, 5, and 6, 7, 8, and 9, right? Three arrays. If I do a select many on that, I can get a single sequence back of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So it just sort of collapsed all those arrays into a single sequence. So this is going through all the shapes, and each shape has many arrows, collecting all the arrows and finding any that have a points to property that's referencing a name that's not there. And if so, that means it's pointing to something that doesn't exist. Again, you can catch it. Not at compile time, but shortly thereafter when you run the unit tests. So I wasn't too concerned about the string literals being in place. And the code that actually executes the flowchart. I'll show you why we're keeping a list of visited shapes in just a bit, but essentially what you do is set up a loop starting with the first shape and say find the first arrow that has a rule where that rule evaluates to true. And if I find that arrow and it points to another shape, I'm going to go to that shape. Otherwise, I'm going to stop. Relatively simple logic. Is that making sense? Let me run this once, and we'll see how it works. And what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to get a result back by telling it to evaluate, and then I'm going to take that result and put it into JSON. This result is literally the movie result enumeration that we saw, so it'll be 0, 1, or 2. Be one of these things. But if we run this, then the page can already tell me I still need more information before I can tell you if this is a good movie or not. So let's put in the movie Hairspray 2, which isn't a real movie, but how many people saw Hairspray, the original Hairspray? Oh, at least a few. Good, good. Yeah. It was set in Baltimore, which is, I live relatively close to there. So I'm hoping there's a sequel, but not a lot of people like musicals anymore. Anyway, entered in the title, still needs more information. So let's enter in a release date, 1/1/2007, still needs more information. Okay, so the length is 90 minutes. Hey, it knows now I've made a great movie, right? But now we want to make Hairspray 2 really long, right? So 240 minutes, not good. How's that working behind the scenes? Essentially, there's just a little piece of JavaScript back here. That goes out and wires up all the inputs, wires up the essentially the blur function, and that's simplifying it a little bit. But essentially, anytime I move out of one of those text boxes, it's going to go request evaluation results for the movie. And that's doing a post to that controller action we were just looking at that instantiates the flowchart. It expects to get JSON back. It's just basically going to serialize all the information in the form so it gets posted back. And then it's going to get a JSON response that we'll process here inside process evaluation results. And this could be done better, but I just put this together really quickly. That's essentially those enumeration values. So a 0 was undetermined. A 1 was a good movie. A 2 was a terrible movie. I'm just going to put that on the screen for people. Any questions so far? Just sort of touring through this code. Because there's another trick to this I wanted to show you. I also wanted the ability to direct the user, because some of these forms, if we were really trying to figure out if this was a good movie or not, we might have a couple pages of information to fill out. But if we could tell that a movie was going to be terrible right away, we wouldn't want the user to keep filling out information if we know there's no hope of, you know, making the movie better. Whereas right now, what they could do is they could type something like 1-1 1999. And I know that's going to be a bad movie because it was released before the year 2000. Remember that rule? But I'm still letting the user fill all the stuff out. And the problem is that the flowchart is stuck at that first check, which says make sure the movie has a title before you progress throughout the rest of the flowchart, right? So what I'd like to do is the ability to have the user fill out information as I'm looking at it in the flowchart. That became a big issue in the software that I was building. And that's possible here through the use of something called requires field, where I say, given a movie M, I am going to, in this piece, I'm going to inspect the title. Now, this, if you saw the IntelliSense, is taking an expression of T. We could, perhaps, have all of these things be expression of T's, and actually walk up to them at runtime and inspect them and look at what properties were being evaluated. That's certainly possible, but it just so turned out that it was very simple to do this. It's very simple to be explicit and say that this part is checking the length. This part is checking the release date. And let's look at what requires field is. Requires field is an extension method on the flowchart that, again, it takes an expression, a func of T. T in this case is going to be movie that returns object. We don't care really what it returns because we're only going to examine it at runtime for some metadata information. It's using a class called property specifier, and I'm going to navigate to that now. Property specifier essentially takes that expression and then looks at it to find out simply what is the name of the property that's being used. If you pass me something that's a member expression, like m.releaseDate will turn into a member expression, then I can pull out the name of the property, literally the string title or the string release date, by coercing that into a member expression and then looking at member expression.member.name. Sometimes you'll get a urinary expression, which would be something like movie goes to m goes to m.length. The C# compiler turns that into a unary expression for whatever reason, but we can still dig the property name out. And this opened up, I'll tell you, some amazing capabilities in the software, because all of a sudden we had all sorts of information about what the flowchart was looking through as it got evaluated. And we could use that to drive not only the user interface, but also do things like mapping between all of the things required in a flowchart and some piece of some object that's in memory that may or may not be the data that we're looking for. Because we know a lot about the flowchart now. And one of the things I can do in my controller, now that I've filled out some required field information, is that this result, after it evaluates, will tell me all of the fields that it looked at. And so what I could do is return not just good movie, bad movie, but I could also say, here's what is required so far. Required fields, but I don't need all the information about the required field in JavaScript. What I could just do is I could transform it and say, for each field, give me the property name that you inspected in the flowchart. All right, and if I format this code and we do a build succeeded. So now we have a little bit of work to do in JavaScript. Let me open up the movie evaluator. And the first thing that we'll do when the page loads is we'll just walk up to all the inputs and we will hide them. So initially when the user goes in there, it's going to be empty. But we're going to run that flowchart once and see what's the first thing you need. What's the first piece of information you need to advance to the next shape? We'll find that out by invoking get evaluation results. And then back here in our JSON result, since we're returning something called required, that should bring me back an array of strings. And what I could do is I could go into jQuery and I could say, go to this results.required, pass it into jQuery just so I can do like an each operator with it. Essentially iterate through that array. And then the nice thing about MVC, if we actually look at the view, what I want to do now with that information, I want to enable some control. If I look at the view, if we looked at the HTML, what we'd find is that the text box for model.title has an ID of title. And the text box for model.release date has an ID of release date. Isn't that convenient? It's like I planned it that way. So that means I should be able to, using jQuery, say that I want to select something by ID. So when I do each, it's going to walk through each string and pass it in as the this pointer in JavaScript. And I just want to show those things. So let me see if this works. Cross your fingers and press F5. Whoops, that didn't work. Oh, and you know why? Because Internet Explorer quite often hates me. So let's do a refresh. Oh, that's interesting. What did I do? I'm sorry? Oh, that's bad. Thank you. Hide. Hide the inputs. Try this again. There we go. So it's a little subtle, but right now only the title box is available for me. So I'm going to go in here and type Star Wars 16. Now I can fill out the length. So I'd have to go in and adjust the UI so that things aren't popping up way down there off the screen. But let's say that the length is 200 minutes. Sorry. Okay. And I'm done, right? It tells me this is terrible. I don't even have to fill out the release date anymore. But if we put in, let's say, 98, release date 1/1/2007, great movie. Questions? Yes, sir. I'm sorry, I didn't need. That's true. So I think the question was, I didn't need the title to determine it was bad. As soon as someone put in the release date of 1999, I should have been able to tell that was bad. Ultimately, that would have happened in the flowchart, right? All I can say is that this example, this demonstration is a little bit contrived. The medical stuff that I worked on actually made sense. And in some ways, you could say, well, maybe this isn't a good fit for what I'm trying to do, and that's certainly reasonable. And I've gotten, you know, lots of feedback on even like the Fluent API here that's creating the flowchart. Some people have told me this is hideous. I would never put this in my software. And I can say, you know, that's fine, but it worked for me, and we did actually have some developers come in and use it. So, more questions? Oh, why am I using, why don't I make the shape names like constants? Yeah, that is certainly a possibility. I was happy just having the unit test backing it up, and it was kind of neat, and again, my particular scenario, it was neat that these strings would stand out as a different color. They were easier to locate and match up with a PDF. That was all. Well, I'm going to stick around to answer questions, but I'll let you out a little early since it is the last session. That's essentially the message that I wanted to get across to you, that Link, don't think of it as just something to query databases. Think of some of these features and how powerful they are. In fact, that those expressions, you'll see them used in a lot of open source libraries that are doing some really interesting things, like AutoMapper and Fluent and Hibernate, and things that let you write code that essentially becomes metadata that is used to do things like map objects to tables. You know, all of that's done through the magic of expression trees. So thank you for coming. Hope you had a great week.